You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson.
Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning, this is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, we share the stories, the expertise and the knowledge of business leaders large and small with you, the listener, and this week is going to be no different. On today's show, we're going to be talking all about marketing, and we're going to put a big focus on copy and property and general marketing along the way. And to do that, we're joined by Charlie Landles of Hook Digital and Rowan Waller of The Property Pen. This is The Business Brunch. We'll be introducing our two guests after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, today we're talking all about marketing and we're joined by two well-known local experts to do exactly that. So let's start by introducing our guests. So Charlie, welcome. For those who don't know you and don't know Hook Digital, talk to us about you and your business.
Hi, Ben. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm Charlie. I started Hook Digital in 2022, which makes us just over 2.5 years, which is terrifying. And we are effectively a full service marketing agency. So we're end to end. We've got a team of 8, each with a different discipline. And we can operate on project based work or effectively become any business's in-house marketing team. So we sort of really get under the skin, get to know their brand, and help them not only deliver, but also strategize with their marketing.
Amazing. Rowan, welcome with a different hat this time. So for those who didn't listen last time, talk to them about you and indeed your new business.
Yeah, so my name is Rowan Waller and I was an estate agent for 20 years and most recently on the business brunch that I would have had Waller's Estate Agents and then I sold that up in 2023, spent a year in employed estate agency and decided that what I really loved about the industry or about my job within the industry had always been the communication side of it. And I've always had a passion for writing. So I combined those two things, so 20 years knowledge of an industry and a passion for writing and communicating and creating the Property Pen. So I'm a freelance writer, but I have a very specific niche, which is writing content and copy for the property industry, mainly estate agents, letting agents, it can be HMO specialists, properties, property companies, or it could be mortgage brokers or maybe conveyancing, something with a property edge.
Amazing, brilliant. And congrats on the new business and really look forward to learning more about the new business over the next hour. But before that, as with your previous visit, you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
I couldn't tell you why I picked it, except it popped in my head the other day and I was sort of driving along singing it. And I think it's because I was driving with my daughter. But it's the JCB song by Nizopli. It may make some people feel a bit nostalgic.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Thanks to Rowan, that song is now going to be in your head whilst you're driving along. If you are just tuning in today, we're joined by Charlie and Rowan and we're talking all about marketing. So Charlie, I think a good place to start this section really is about what makes good marketing, which I appreciate is quite a big question and lots of variables, but what does make good marketing and what are some of the things that small businesses should consider?
Yeah, I mean, marketing in general is a really, really broad term, isn't it? And there's definitely a crossover with sales. I think the best way of explaining it is marketing in general is sales with emotion. So it has to communicate, has to be authentic, and it has to be relatable, especially in sort of, as we see AI coming through and influencing the industry. I think what Rowan's doing is really, you know, pertinent at the moment with making it authentic, human to human, especially on the copy side. Good marketing in general, it's really tricky to measure. Some people will measure it by increase in sales, increase in reach, increase in following. I think as long as it is that authentic element, and it's not trying to be something it isn't. So personal branding is a really good example of good marketing, you know, putting across your service through content marketing, but also putting across yourself. And I think for small businesses, that latter part's really important. People these days want to see faces behind the brand, the people who are delivering the service that they might be interested in. And they don't want things necessarily shoved down their throat. They want to be able to feel like they're making that decision themselves. So it's about getting the right messaging out there on the correct platforms, and not forcing it, I think, is the main thing.
Absolutely. And Rowan, I think Charlie makes a really good point there around personality and showing your personality. Mm-hmm. From an estate agency point of view, but I think any business, I think people buy people, don't they? You may have three estate agents that come around to your house, and you may buy the best marketing. You may buy the best personality or whatever. But how do you ensure that your written copy is engaging, is going to give you that market difference, but also in line with what they're going to see in the flesh, in the person talking to them?
I mean, well, so what your last point is exactly what you need to. You need to ensure that actually what they do get in the flesh in the person is what they're expecting. I do an element of marketing, and really what I'm doing is content marketing. Charlie just mentioned content marketing. There's different forms of marketing, and what I think content marketing is about. It's about promoting a brand over the course of time without necessarily mentioning the brand. So it's the brand could be the person, by the way. Mm. So it's about disseminating a message or an idea to this audience of people who gradually absorb it without it necessarily being an advert each time. So actually, I did a post the other day, and I said, arguably, I wouldn't put a call to action in this post. You know, you don't always need a call to action to say, you know, if you're thinking about selling a house, give us a call today. Because that's just a bit of a slap in the face. So I'm slightly going off the point about saying about, you know, coming back to the person that you're expecting to see. But the point is that where, from my point of view, and the people who I'm trying to help, which is specifically estate agents, what I want is that by the time people are inviting this agent out, they believe they know this person, they kind of already want to use this person. And therefore, if they meet somebody who's different to this persona that's been created through this drip-fed content marketing, then actually it's going to go against you. So it always has to represent brand voice. The target market should be expected. So you shouldn't be having people come out that aren't really going to be interested in your house as the product. So all of that should have been disseminated and absorbed over this kind of period of education, where the marketing is educating the consumer about who this agent is, what they represent, how they're going to go about selling a property, so that the conversation is just then dead easy, because it's almost like you already know each other.
No, really, really, really interesting. And Charlie, how do you separate a person from a business? And I appreciate we have brands. So if we were to talk about estate agents for a moment, Savills, very few people are going to know who the owner of Savills is. But if we were to go and talk about Cherry Picked Residential, people know it's AJ and Vinny. So at what point do you separate your name from the business or you as an individual? And how do you ensure that your marketing is presenting you as individuals, but also the business? Does that sort of make sense? I haven't worded that very well.
No, I think it depends on a lot of factors. So one is strategy. Some people will come out, you know, blocks with a strategy that they want to be brand led. Mm. So they're going to market the business more than themselves. I think there's an element of size as well. If you are a smaller business offering a more boutique, particularly an estate agency where people want to have someone on the end of the phone they can call, you might strategize then, well, actually, we're going to stay small, we're going to stay boutique, and we're going to put our names front and center. I think platform can also come into it. So you might find that, and what we've seen a lot in the property world recently is that people working for the likes of Knight Frank and Savills also have a personal brand. So they're working on Instagram on their own accounts. So they have that connection with a direct audience, particularly on LinkedIn as well. A lot of business owners, no matter what the size, are starting to personally brand themselves. so that, as Rowan says, they can then find the brand through that person rather than having it shoved in their face. So, you know, it's not right for to sort of have a carpet approach, an umbrella approach of going, well, you should be brand led or you should be personally led. I think it very much depends on the market you're in, the size of your business, and your overarching marketing strategy.
And Rowan, I'd be keen to gain your thoughts on this, because of course you ran Wallers, your name was above the door, and I think you did a lot of marketing, didn't you? Like, marketing was a big part of Wallers. What was your thought process throughout that journey?
Well, I was almost a personal brander. So Wallers, it was my name above the door, but that was slightly accidental, because I didn't actually ever want my name above the door. My name went above the door because I was called ISIS Estate Agents and needed to change my name in a hurry. And I plucked Wallers of Oxford out of the hat with no real consultation and no marketing advice on that. I mean, it didn't do me badly, but it did always mean that as it was my name above the door, it was kind of, people sort of expected me to be there. And my intention hadn't really ever been to be the guy that did it all. So I didn't want to be the figurehead and leading it. But my ambition in business was to have a business that ran itself without me having to go and do that. I might be pulling the strings in a gentle way, helping my staff run a business. But I didn't actually want to be on the coalface, and that's the trouble with this personal branding I went through, is that it was almost expected that it was going to be me. And actually, I would argue that, I mean, personal brand is easy to personal brand when you are the only person in the company, right? So you can do a lot of personal branding, and it is about you. But actually, if you do want to grow, the marketing story has to be slightly different. I mean, you mentioned, if you think about Cherry Pick Residential, it's Ajay and Vinny. But it's not true, because it's also Ollie and it's also Ben. So actually you want those guys to have just as much impact when they're going through the door. And that's what Charlie's talking about. Ben and Ollie are going to have to personally brand themselves as well through their own social media under Cherry Pick Residential. And they're doing it, by the way. So this isn't a dig at Cherry Pick Residential in any way. But so that Cherry Picked as a brand is reflecting four or five individuals. It's not just reflecting those two owners, and it is a tricky job, and it's especially tricky when you spent the first, not, this isn't Cherry Pick, this is back to Wallers, but when you spent the first 3 years as a one-man band personally branding yourself, and then you go, right, now it's time to get a shop and get two members of staff in, and I'm going to take a step back. Well, actually, all the marketing that I've been doing for 3 years is now sort of not working against me exactly, but it's pigeonholing me down this route that I'm now trying to get out of, and bring my staff into the fold and give them their voice and have the general expectation of the market go, okay, I want Waller's estate agents to come out. I don't want Rowan Waller to come out, although it would be nice, and I understand who he is and what the culture of the company is, because it reflects that owner. So then that marketing journey has to change. So yeah, personal branding is one thing, but branding is about more than logo, right? Branding is about what the customer and the consumer can expect to get from this company, this agency, this whatever it is that's going to be looking after them.
No, really, really interesting. And from a marketing point of view, Charlie, I think if we were to Google every business in Oxfordshire, I guess most would say we offer great service. Most would say we're good at what we do. Most would say the fluffy buzzwords as a recruiter, what I always see on every CV is every candidate's ambitious, every candidate's hardworking. And I think from a recruitment point of view, I'd say if you can be quantifiable, be quantifiable. From a marketing point of view, is there a benefit of being a bit different? So should we all be saying that we offer great service, or is that a given? How do we quantify that in marketing?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I think it comes down to three things. So, you know, first of all, as Rowan's just touched on, brand is really, really becoming more important than ever. And that's not just how you appear. It's your reputation within the community, local and wider. It's every touch point of your business, whether it's print collateral or online, social media, make sure that tone of voice is continuous, because that starts to build trust. I think another route is the third party endorsement. So we have an increasing demand for video testimonials because sometimes putting Google reviews, because like you say, everyone's doing it, it's the same as saying we deliver a great service. Actually putting faces to names of clients that are going to endorse you and deploying that content across your website and social media can really help when they're going through that trust building phase on your website. Say it's the first time they've visited, and the first or third thing they see are two people actually backing up what you're saying about yourself. Can really, really help. And the third way of doing it is actually to go completely against the grain. And we're starting to see it, particularly in the sort of software industry, where people are saying they're the number two or they're the number three. Just so when people are engaging on that landing page, they're going, oh, no one else says that. That's quite, you know, it's quirky. That then it engages them immediately. There's also an element of subconsciously you think, well, they're obviously honest. Even though they might be number 10, but they're just doing something a little bit different. And again, I think there's no right answer for everyone. It totally depends on how you want. It comes back to that branding element. It's how you want to deploy yourself to your target audience. Do you want to be authentic and tongue in cheek? Do you want to be super slick and professional? That might depend on industry. You know, marketing agencies can be a little bit, not offensive, but you know, near that line with their tone of voice and how they're presenting themselves. Whereas if you're in the legal sector, you're going to have to probably follow some regulations. So it depends how far you can stretch it. It depends how far those business owners want to stretch it. But yeah, to say it comes down to sort of brand, testimonial, and if you really want to go for it, have a little bit of humor in there as well.
Amazing. Amazing. Charlie, as with Rowan, you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. So what is your song choice and why have you picked it?
So it's a strange one. It was a song by Block Party I used to listen to a lot as a kid. And for some reason, it was never on Spotify. And it really annoyed me because I always had to use YouTube. And it's only recently I've discovered it's on Spotify. And it also ties in with the fact we're just over 2 years old. We've had a really fortunate 2 years of growth and learning curves, you name it. And we're hoping for two more of the same. So the song is Two More Years by Block Party.
Discussing topics that impact local businesses and their owners, this is The Business Brunch. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that very creative song chosen by Charlie, you would think he runs a marketing business, wouldn't you? We've been speaking with our two experts, Rowan and Charlie, all about the world of marketing. Rowan, I think a big piece of software that's been spoken about a lot is AI or using AI in marketing. I wrote this blog on AI. Should you do that or shouldn't you?
Well, I mean, so AI has lots of uses, and you could type into AI, write me 800 words on, you know, on the interest rates drop this week, for example, and AI will produce you 800 strung together English words that read okay. And there's some benefit in, so it depends what you want to get out of your marketing exercise, right? AI is capable of producing some I was going to say factual content. So AI is capable of producing content that is basically readable, that can go up on your blog page, that can improve your Google ranking. But there's a couple of problems with it still, and it may get better over the next 10 years, right? So we'll have to watch what comes down the line. But it could have swept information from sources that actually aren't correct. So you have to really check it and know your stuff when you are going through this content. And actually, that's sometimes a problem if you are perhaps outsourcing to what a major plug this is, but if you outsource to somebody who's not a specialist marketeer in the industry, they won't necessarily know if they use AI, look, can you just draft me 800 words about the interest rate drop? And they get the 800 words and they might assume it's true. They won't know enough about the industry to kind of fact check that. So sometimes you can use that and then you could tweak that article. Personally, I don't, but I do use AI. So I will write an article, for example. I'll write my article and then I will ask AI, I'll say, hello, chat. And it will say, hi, how are you doing today? And I say, I've just written an article. I wouldn't mind you looking at it, please. Always say please and thank you to AI. And then you paste it in and it will go through it. And it might say, yeah, this is a strong article. It's well balanced. It leans more heavily towards investors. So you might want to think about a paragraph to to help first-time buyers understand what this means to them. And I might sit in that and I might think, yeah, that's quite interesting. Or I might think, yeah, I know, but this particular piece is actually geared towards investors, so I'm just going to ignore that. And then and obviously AI, just like you can use a spell check on Word, but AI will pick out little mistakes and you can just tweak it. So you can use AI to, you know, make your work better. What you could also do with AI, so SEO companies hate this, but I will run my article through AI and say, look, can you score this for SEO optimization? And it will give me hints and tips, and it will usually give me a score of whatever. It's currently scores 8.2, but you could improve it by changing your title. The title's good, but there's no keywords in it, so you might want to, you know. And then you could go back through it and then run it again, and it lifted the score to 8.9. And it says if you add a meta description, then it's going to, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So AI as a tool is very useful. AI in terms of being able to produce content. I was actually speaking to an estate agent about what I do, and they said, yeah, we just ask AI. We just say, ChatGPT, can you do us an article about interest rates dropping? And I said, yeah, I know that's what you do. I've read your article and I don't want to sort of be offensive, but they're not interesting enough. And if I want to write an article that has the SEO benefit for a client, that's one thing. That's what a lot of clients want out of it. But as what I want out of it as a writer is that somebody reads my article from word one to word 800 or word 1500 and goes, that's really interesting. I've been engaged all the way through. I follow that because people say they don't like reading. It's a skill to get people to read an article because a lot of people want it on video. So, you know, a lot of what I'm doing is actually video scripts for people, not just written blogs. But blogs are very powerful, especially when you're looking to create authority and when you're looking to be an expert, because actually your customers expect you to be able to, they have this expectation that you're able to write in an informative and sort of educated way. And actually the blog writing element helps, but it's got to be engaging enough that they read it and come out of it thinking, God, you know your onions. I'm going to follow you next week and see what you say next.
No, really, really good insight there, Rowan. What's your take on this, Charlie?
Yeah, AI is a really interesting topic of conversation at the moment. I think we need to come away from this idea that it's a replacement. It's not. It's a supplement. It's a tool in the same way that, you know, new video editing software isn't going to do all of it for you. And it certainly isn't going to be able to carry across your brand voice and style as you'd like it to. You know, you can teach AI your brand voice, but it's never going to be quite there. And as Rowan says, there are dangers of misinformation and just gaps here. And, you know, Google's trying to clamp down on it anyway. So if you are churning out everything through AI and you're not editing it yourself, it's never really going to stick. I think your process, Rowan, you'll write it and then you'll use AI as a tool to then elevate that, is exactly what it's there for. We had a really interesting client recently who runs a private care company, and they're using AI as a database for their carers to ask questions. So they've loaded in all of their company policies, all of their processes, and so they can go on, log into the same GPT and basically put in a question and it will have a bespoke answer for them. Now, that's not replacing anyone. That's just making operations more effective. And again, it's a tool. So I think, you know, Cintra have come out with these AI employees that are supposed to be able to work you up a social media marketing strategy and they'll respond to emails for you. I'm not trusting AI to respond to emails for me. Mm-hmm. Because again, it comes to that personal effect you want to have with your clients. And I'm certainly not letting it trust our social media strategy, because we need to be flexible and dynamic with that. And every brand's different. If everyone starts using AI, there's no point in marketing anyway. If anything, it will make it easier to stand out if you're not, because you will have that more human voice. And I think the more prevalent it becomes, people are coming wise to recognizing it immediately. And that can be really harmful to trust.
I was speaking to somebody yesterday who was in digital marketing, and they are recommending to their clients not to use AI, because Google is going to start to pull content that Google can recognize is generated by AI. So it will actually kill that algorithm. It won't boost your, it doesn't matter how many keywords or bullet pointed, you know, segments or short choppy paragraphs are in there. If Google knows that ChatGPT has written it, it's going to go and drop it to the second page of Google.
Yeah.
And from an overall marketing, how do you tie marketing together? I think there will be lots of people that listen to this show who run businesses and currently, as the example that Rowan gave, they just currently chuck a few bits into ChatGPT, or they might have a website that's 10 years old or whatever. Like if you're listening now and you think, do you know what, my marketing's a bit naff, or I'm not really sure whether my marketing's good. Like what should you do first? What is that process?
Well, so that, I mean, God, there's so much you can read up about marketing. A good one. So a really good basis to start with, just for marketing strategy. Okay, so it's good to come at marketing with a strategy. And a very basic one to think about is the 50-30-20 rule. Okay, so you have 50% of the content. This is about content marketing, perhaps more than anything else. But 50% of your content is informative or educational, and 30% of it is more sort of engaging or entertaining content. So that, you know, because people often think about, okay, social media strategy, I need to be dancing on TikTok. You do not want 100% of your content to be that, because people will laugh at it, but they won't necessarily take you seriously, right? So 50% is informing, educating. It's the essential stuff, that the things that your customer base needs to know. 30% the engagement stuff, and then the last 20% is your promotional stuff. So when you are actually trying to sell something, or your call to action stuff, just, you know, however tempting it is to try and make everything an advert, that's advertising. So people use marketing and think it's for the lowest hanging fruit stuff, and really that's advertising. Whereas your content marketing is your long game stuff. It's the stuff that, and you know, especially in an industry like property where people move every 19 years on average, you know, you're having to work on these people for a long time. Actually, what I like marketing to do, sorry, I'm not going to go totally off the point here, but when your customers are only customers once every, let's even call it 7 years, right? Because that's what we all used to think, that people move every 7 years. What I used to get at Waller's, and what I try and make my marketing, the marketing I'm producing for other people do, is that I used to get called by people who say, oh, I was recommended by you know, Jane Stevens. And I would have no clue who Jane Stevens was. Jane Stevens was just following me and liking my stuff. And when somebody said they were moving house, they said, oh, you should try Waller's Estate Agents. So that's the power of creating this sort of this brand marketing, is that you create this kind of set of fans in the background who aren't even using your services, but they're still going on to advocate you to other people. So my basic point, and then I'll move on, let Charlie kind of take over and bring it home, is go in with a strategy and know what that strategy is.
Yeah, I think as Rowan says, strategy is key. Before you start anything, you need to know where you want to be from the results of your marketing, whether that's a tangible result or just an overall feeling that your following and awareness has increased. But the key thing I would say is a wider marketing umbrella. Don't try and do everything, because your target audience might not necessarily be on every platform. You know, we have some clients come to us and go, we need to rebrand, we need a new website, we need to be doing loads of outreach marketing, social media marketing, we want remailers, we want Google ads. And we go, whoa. Let's drill down to your business, your pain points. Where have your target audience often come from? How do we think they're finding you? How do we find more of those people? And do you think there's a target market you haven't tapped into yet? And so we would then tailor the solution within that strategy to go, right, well, you want to have, you know, X percentage increase in inbound inquiries over the next 12 to 18 months. We've identified this is where your target market should be. On average, from our research, we need to be doing this and that. And those are the only two things we focus on. Once we've done those, we can reevaluate, we can have a look. And I think the content marketing brand side is something that needs to be continuous. But in terms of the direct sale and commercial marketing, if you want to use that term, is you need to have a tangible strategy and not try and do everything and really focus on one thing. And get it right, rather than trying to do everything, because especially with a lot of small businesses, you'll spread yourselves too thin. And ultimately, if you're putting 10% of effort into 10 avenues and you could have put 100% of effort into one, you'd have been much better off just using the one.
Yeah. Be anything you want to be, but you can't be everything.
And exactly that
thing as well.
Yeah, exactly that.
That's a really interesting point, because I think that most businesses have, not all, but most businesses have a page on most social channels, and most businesses focus on either all of them to a small extent, or they don't post for 5 years, but they just have the page. What should you do in that scenario? So focusing on catch your audience, Charlie, which is your motto. If your audience aren't on, let's say, Facebook, or if they aren't on TikTok, should you still have a TikTok page? Should you, and not post on it very much? Should you use the content from other pages? Should you still create persuade? Like, what's the thought process there?
It comes down to the capacity at the end of the day. I think if you know for sure your target audience isn't on a platform, then I would say just don't bother with it. Because what you might find is if you have a page there that's been inactive for 5 years, and it's backlinked on your website, and someone scrolls down to the foot and goes, oh, have a look on their Facebook, and you haven't posted in 5 years, they're going to think, are they still running? If your target is to, you know, generate more sales and income from your social media, then you want to be where your target market is. If you've got a Facebook account or a LinkedIn account and no one's engaging, and you're very much a B2C company, get off it. And put it, you know, comes back to that 100% into one avenue. Put all of your focus and energy into the platforms where your target audience is. But again, you know, some businesses, a lot of businesses will have a B2C and a B2B element. And that's where it comes down to differentiating your content types. So particularly in the property world, you know, your B2C in terms of attracting vendors, landlords, buyers, renters has got to be personable and not too salesy. Your LinkedIn, where you might be looking at landowners and far more of a B2B audience and maybe business success, that can be data-led, that can be data-driven, it can be heavier content, so to speak. So as much as it's about choosing which platform, it's about making sure you're not using the same content across them all. They need to pander to the, because the audience will change both, you know, age demographic, employment demographic, B2B, B2C, they will change across those platforms. So, and it comes back to what we've been saying about strategy. You know, when you're laying out where you want to be, it's how you're going to use, you go granular, how you're going to use each platform for each target audience with that's on them, and the sort of content they digest.
Really interesting. Let's have another song and we'll continue the conversation after this.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Our business breakfasts start from just £15. Find out more at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, we are joined today by Rowan and Charlie, and we're talking all about marketing. Rowan, I'm going to give your other venture a plug here, Billy the Goat and the £5 Note. If you haven't read it and you've got children, make sure you buy a copy. But there is relevance to this other than a plug. So Billy the Goat and the £5 Note is written for children. It's a great children's book, and all about entrepreneurial spirit early on. And in that book, how you market that book is, I presume that you would market to parents, but then the content in the book has to be understandable for a child. Mm-hmm. But then if you're targeting very technical people for, I don't know, a science and tech business, and I imagine that you need to think about who is that audience and how do you talk in their language. But then if you're targeting somebody to buy a house, you need to talk in their language. So how do you understand the language of your audience, and how creative should you be with that language when writing?
Well, I mean, you've almost answered your question in the question itself. So you have an audience to hit. So the audience you're hitting needs to be able to engage. They need to be able to engage with that content, and they need to do it quickly. Otherwise they'll switch off. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably, you know, I'm not going to go down a route where I'm trying to specialize in scientific or technical language, which is why I'm not a copywriter for the science and tech industry. Okay. So it's not my specialism. I'm pretty sure that ChatGPT would do a better job writing content for, you know, for scientists and research and developers than I could. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure about that, but it's about understanding what's going to hook them in. So if that's going to float their boat and you are going to be writing content, then you need to be able to, you need to engage that straight away. So your opening sentence, your opening paragraph has to show your expertise and authority in an area. So if language is going to do that, And actually, the thing is, what I do is I pretty much ghostwrite for and let's call it estate agents. So I'm ghostwriting for estate agents. The estate agents aren't getting exactly the same content. They're getting, I might write an article, for example, I might write an article about interest rates dropping last Thursday. I might do. That article will be it'll be a core article written, but each estate agent client that I've got will have a different brand voice. So what I'm having to do is actually write these articles in their voice, use the language that they write, which has to do two things. It has to engage with their audience of potential sellers, potential landlords, and actually be open enough and readable enough for buyers and tenants to also kind of engage with, even though they're not the client, not the target client. But it also has to represent the brand that I'm writing for. Okay, so there is, so for example, were I write, we've mentioned Knight Frank earlier. Knight Frank are a different type of estate agent to, without picking on anyone, let's call it Waller's Estate Agents as was, right? So Waller's Estate Agents would have had a much more down-to-earth, jocular tone of voice that was still authoritative, but it was connecting on a, in my mind, a more human level, more conversational tone. Whereas were I writing for Knight Frank, I would have to elevate that, because the audience that Knight Frank are trying to engage, so if you have to kind of read through what their mission statement is, but they are talking about being discerning, and they are talking about being, you know, they are, I don't know whether they use the word upmarket, because that's a bit of a slap in the face, but they are an upmarket brand looking to catch a certain type of clientele who you might not want to be so jocular with in this form of content. So it's a convoluted answer to a really, really simple question. And but there's not one way to answer it.
Mm-hmm. And Charlie, and Rowan, you may give your view on this as well, but how polished do you need to be, or does that depend on your brand? The majority of people that listen to this show are the small business owner, and how polished do you need to be? So of course, let's say that your spelling and grammar isn't amazing, you're not at the level of Charlie and Rowan, and you're looking to post on LinkedIn and you're worried that actually I've put a comma in the wrong place. Does that matter on LinkedIn? Can you just be authentic in a video, sat in your car, having a video of yourself? Like, I guess, what are the considerations of being just you, and what are the considerations of using an expert like yourself and Rowan?
I think if you're generating your own content, and it's a personal concern that you don't want to be showing off any sort of grammatical errors or spelling errors, then that is where we come back to AI. That could be a really good tool for you, just to run a quick check, and then you can post it. You know, it shouldn't change your tone of voice. It should still be you. It should just read, you know, a bit easier, perhaps. When it comes to the video content, I don't think, especially on the personal side, if you're filming yourself, I don't think you want to be too polished. I think you want to have some authenticity behind it. It doesn't want to look too scripted. It doesn't want to look like you're reading off something you've printed off. You just want to talk to camera as you would, like, you know, on this or face to face, and be yourself. Because ultimately, you know, coming back to the very start of this, if the person they're going to meet eventually, having engaged with that content, is different from the person they saw on the content, you're going to have an immediate trust break. And I'll let Rowan talk about the copy side of things, but I think from the video, authenticity is key.
Yeah, from copy, I think it does matter a little bit more with spelling mistakes and grammar. because actually, even if people would say that they themselves aren't very good at grammar or aren't very good at spelling, and they recognize it in themselves, if they see it in other people, I do think that there's an expectation that the people that they're going to pay lots of money to should be. There's just this idea, and I think this is very psychological, that this has been ingrained in us to do well at school, and this is a problem in society, right? So I'm not supporting this, but it is just it's the reality. So we come out, if you haven't done that well in school, you still nevertheless want to give your money to people that you think probably should have done well at school, right? Because these are people you're trusting to sell your house that's worth £500,000. So I do think it can make a difference if you're reading something as a consumer and there's obvious spelling mistakes. You know, if somebody has used the word pacifically instead of specifically, if somebody has said the cold face instead of the coal face, and you recognize that and you go, oh, he's got that wrong. And as soon as somebody's picks a hole in something that you've written, which is there, you can't escape from it, it's written, then it just leaves this little nagging element of doubt. And so you'll see half of my LinkedIn posts, and I'm pretty well written, right? And I can be well spoken if I want to be. But half my LinkedIn posts, if you go through them, it will then say edited because I've posted it. And as soon as I've posted it, I've recognized, oh God, I've put an apostrophe in its, and it's a possessive its. It doesn't need the apostrophe in there. And I can't bear it. I cannot bear to see that. So I have to go in and take it out. So I think, with copy and content, I think it matters a lot more. In video, you know, who knows if there's a comma there or not? Can't see it.
No, really good advice. We are coming to the point.
I have got this is a question for Charlie. I've got a question for Charlie because I use CapCut when I do video, and I can't bear it when the written captions don't have a comma. So I'll try and put a comma in, but CapCut will often nudge it down like to the next line or onto the next frame, which just looks rubbish. So I end up having to take the punctuation out of my captions on CapCut for subtitling. And I really can't bear that. But what do the public think of that? What do public think about non-punctuated subtitles?
I think with subtitles like CapCut, because they're so fast moving, most people wouldn't necessarily notice. You know, someone in your field definitely would. But the reason those captions are there are a hook. And it's to pull people in. So if they've got their sound off on public transport or at work or on their lunch break, the first few subtitles they quickly see, it's quick moving, it draws the eye, they quickly read it. Okay, yeah, that's the topic I want to hear more about. I'm a bit like you. I quite like there to be more punctuation. So the software we were using, I would go through and I'd edit each line and make sure the timing lined up perfectly. But I wouldn't say it's, you know, the number one consideration to be having. I think they're there almost for a different tool. Once people have engaged, their sound's on, they're listening to you, and you're away.
Amazing, amazing. You're making me paranoid about my videos now. But anyway, let's move on. So we are coming to the very, very final stint of the show, and we're almost out of time. But one of the things that we do like to do for our listeners is leave with a top tip. So a lasting note for them to consider, whether it be something we've not discussed or whether it be something just to underline in their notepad, because of course our listeners have been making lots of notes. Of course they have. So I guess let's start with you, Charlie. What would be your top tip to take away with?
I think always consider your hook, especially with the fast moving pace of things online at the moment. And that's not me plugging the brand name. But instead of saying things like, here's how to do this, start with, we did this and here are the results. And it just sparks a little bit more intrigue. They don't necessarily know what topic you're going to be covering. And it hooks them into content because ultimately you've only got a couple of seconds to get them engaged.
And last but not least, Rowan.
Start strong and tell a story in your content. So if people are reading written content, be that short form or long form, follow a story arc, which is beginning, middle, end in really basic terms, or it can go really deep in Todorov's theory of, you know, five stages of equilibrium to disequilibrium to recognizing the problem, to the conflict resolution, and then the final resolution leading back to equilibrium. So that's your Todorov's theory, narrative theory. You can bring that into your content writing, then you engage an audience all the way through, start to finish.
Amazing. Well, that is the end of the show. So thank you so much to our two guests for joining us on the Business Brunch here on Get Radio today. If you are just tuning in, we've been joined by Charlie Landells of Hook Digital and Rowan Waller of The Property Pen. And we are going to be back next week with brand new guests impacting on many Oxfordshire businesses. So next week, we're going to be talking all about the Oxfordshire Business Awards. And to do that, we're joined by Simon Bassett, who also is of RWK Goodman, and also Heather Wood of Keep Me Fabulous, as well as, of course, the Oxfordshire Business Awards. So do be sure to tune in, as that's definitely going to be a good one that I know that my team at Thompson & Terry really enjoyed last year. Also, just a reminder, you can listen to this radio show on the radio or online every Sunday at 11 a.m. And do look out for the podcast version, which is available via every major podcast platform and is released on the Monday morning. And do look out for the video format so you can see my lovely guests, which is posted on the Get Radio Facebook page and the website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing this Sunday, enjoy, and we'll see you next week.